My faith. That'll be a short one.
May we also ask you the name of your daughters?
Yeah, Debbie.
And where
Are they? Deborah, D-E-B-R-A. Deborah Lynn. So I guess she was in a sense, well, not supposed to be named after her daddy, who was Lenny.
L-Y-N-N.
And Jody Sue, J-O-D-I-S-U-E. Sounds like she's from Alabama. Nobody names anybody Jody Sue unless it's from the Deep South.
She's perfect?
No, she's Jody. Joe, for me.
Any traditions in the home that you'd like to comment on?
Yeah, let me tell you something that comes to mind right away. As a person who valued knowledge and all that, you would think that I'd have been a father who watched carefully the academic movements, you know, interaction, interest of my children. I did not. I was a neglectful father. I thought it was studiousness. I would not help them with their homework. I'm not saying I never did, but for the most part, I didn't consider that one of my preferred tasks in this life. It turns out that they were honor everything, you know, A plus and everything all the way through school, so they never really needed that. Sometimes I thought maybe they were that good because I never gave them.
Mm-hmm. Are they professional women today?
No, my daughter Debbie, they're both graduates, degrees, but Jody works with her mama, and Debbie is now, along with her husband, in nursing school. They just started nursing school. They're less than 40, but they just started. They decided. My Keith Bailey, my son.
Which one works with her?
Jody, the younger. That's the younger. Jody had training in special education, but decided not to pursue that. Instead, to get into her mother's decorating business with her, which she discovered over the last few years she really didn't like that much. And has been doing some other things and really become a sort of intellectual in a lot of subjects. She's begun to read more than she ever did before. One kid at least, and maybe two, who have attentional deficit disorder, which is really, really wonderful. Kids with that, you know, drugs, you know, like stuff like that. That's been a sore spot in my life. Debbie's kids are fantastic. My Jeremy is the light of my life. And I think he's going to be a great man. I think he's a great kid already, but I think he's destined for greatness. He's 10 years old, and they're telling me I'm doing first year of college tonight. So, you know, he's really tops of everything, including his physical stuff. He's the strongest kid in the school, spiritually.
Dr. Schwartz, why don't we move on to your professional life? You had mentioned that you wrote some papers. I guess what I'd like is just a chronological report on your professional life. You said at age 16 you had an interest in exercising and building your body up. And
yeah, I started weightlifting.
That formed into what you do today.
Well, in a way, the connections are not obvious, but when you look back, you sort of suspect they must exist. I was a little kid. I'm still little. But I was in the fourth or fifth percentile, perhaps, when I was 16 years old, and I decided it's just to gain weight. And I stopped that around the time of my marriage. 21. But I was good at it. and continued it in the service a little bit here and there. And sometimes taught a class in it occasionally to my colleagues on Saipan. You want this more to be related to my whole professional, being a doctor business.
You had said that you had private practice as well as teaching at Monahera.
Oh, yeah. I was essentially a private practitioner. I started practice in 1956 and practiced, as I said, for 30 years, so around 86. And I became chief of psychiatry at the hospital in 1963. Remained that until I essentially quit.
You wrote your first book when?
Published book was 1982.
And the title?
It was called Heavy Hands, The Ultimate Exercise. And it was published by Little Brown and was kind of a bestseller for somebody who had no name, was not a celebrity, and no name in athletics either.
And you developed Heavy Hands?
Later. The first book, I should show you as books, but the first book, people on the cover use an ordinary cast iron weight. I developed a method of exercise before I developed the hand weight. The hand weight is an afterthought.
And what year was that?
Well, they came out several months later of the year the book was published. But I'd been working on the book long before it was published, and I thought about the hand weights about the time the book got published, and they weren't out, and I sold them to somebody. I just made a phone call to AMF. They came and visited me, and they thought it was unique. Can't be very unique. It's either unique or it ain't. They thought they would be a winner, essentially. I had them made for me, had no idea patenting them until my friend Saul said, that is patentable art, you should patent it. And so I did. I had them made for me because the exercise I was doing was so demanding on the upper body, along with the lower, that one needed a strap to keep the weight like a glove on the hand, and so that one didn't grip too much, which does all kinds of negative things like increased blood pressure. So they were made essentially for a combination of reasons, mostly for my narcissistic ones that had to do with my own comfort in doing rather sizable intensities of exercise. And each of the movements was an invention, which you don't patent generally, although I just got a patent enough on a method of exercise.
When you called this person to sell it to, did you transfer the patent? Did you sell it?
I licensed it.
You licensed it?
Yeah. I
what's the name of the company?
AMF.
American Machine.
They're out of existence now because of things like that.
Substance.
Yeah.
Right.
But you said you just patented it. You just had patented a method of exercise?
Yes, I developed another technique that essentially uses the same principles of exercise. I've been after a unique system of exercise that would be not different for differences' sake, but different because of greater advantage to the exerciser. It's very difficult to get America to exercise. Extraordinary.
Can you describe this new method to us?
You want to take a walk?
Well, I can't. I can't leave the table.
Just
we
can turn it off for 1 second, and then we'll come right back. Anaerobics is a system I've been working on for these 15 years, which has several principles, all drawn from physiologic research done at the Human Energy Laboratory at Pittman for the last almost 10 years. So I've funded that research and the physical laboratory itself. that exercise, by the way, is catching on all over the world, although it's quite dissociated from what I started out to do. It's very interesting how that happened. If you don't continue to sell yourself from a PR point of view, you drop out of the picture, and which is a good thing for me to be doing at this time in my life anyhow, but it's very interesting.
Being sold?
No. There are several companies interested in it, and I have little doubt that by the end of 1992 or 1993, somebody will take it on, because they'll take it on for mostly wrong reasons. Because unfortunately, I don't sell pieces of equipment or ideas to exercise physiologists. I sell them to businessmen, and they're interested in you know, what sells, and I'm interested in what's going to change the world. I want to be famous after I'm dead.
You will be.
I may be, but it may be for some other reason.
Dr. Schwartz, could you tell us about your other publications as well, and the titles and years of publication? You have written several books.
Well, I've written three books on exercise, and they're all either, you know, Heavy Hands, The Ultimate Exercise, was sort of the survey course. After that, I got particularly interested in certain things because of what was happening in the exercise world. For example, I wrote a book on walking with hand weights, Heavy Hands Walking, because running had already just about reached its demise in this country and was losing ground at the rate of about 30% per year. And I knew that walking would be its logical replacement and become the mainstay of American fitness, which it is, ridiculously, but it is. It's a senseless thing, but
walking is?
Oh, yeah. Walking is really, for anybody who's not 80 years old or has had a couple of coronaries, walking, you wouldn't want to give a 15-year-old kid walking as their exercise, the thing to keep them fit. There are a lot of reasons for that. The biggest of them is that walking is a terribly difficult exercise to extend. Most people walk at 3 miles an hour, 3.1 actually, most research shows. When you try to get them to walk 4 or 5 miles an hour, you run into real difficulty. It's not because that's a tremendous amount of work, it's because the legs balk at that kind of extension. When you walk 4.5 miles an hour, you get the great impulse to run, to become airborne. And so staying on the ground at fast pace is very difficult, biomechanically. You can get people to do much more work at a slow pace if you put weights in their hands and get them to move the weights. Now you can increase the workload, the calorie loss per minute and all that, plus all the cardiovascular effects, if you work the whole body and don't make it dependent upon fast leg movement. It's a very strange phenomenon. But you know, people supposedly in the know and great, you know, great celebrities and our presidential candidates, whatever, will say all kinds of things about walking.
Weights provide cardiovascular at this 3.1.
No, they don't. That's the problem. If you're not using hand weights.
With hand weights.
No. Most people walking not encumbered will zero in at 3.3.
I knew that. With hand weights.
Oh, you can go up to... we did a study at Pitt where we got kids who were kind of trained, but not on this. You know, they were fit. They could increase the calorie loss by adding little three-pound hand weights to 500%. 500%. They used 5 times the number of calories per minute. And so there's a tremendous amount of work that can be done, physical work in the physiologic sense of that, can be done when a lot of muscles are mobilized simultaneously.
And so that was your second book, The Walking.
But then I wrote a third, which was a revised and published myself, a revised edition of the second book with an appendix and several more chapters and. I'd give you a book if you like a souvenir of this. Yeah, I'll absolutely do that.
Dr. Schwartz, what stimulated you to start
the whole idea of this principle? Mm-hmm. I started at about age 50 to run. And I was okay at it, except I've never a great runner. I ran, 4, 5, 8 minute miles. Yeah, it was a workout. But I had a terrible problem with my left hamstring. And really, severe pain on every workout. And one day I got the thought, maybe if I would mobilize more body muscle, slow down my running pace, or even go into a walk, and use more muscle, I could generate the same VO2. VO2 means volume of oxygen utilized per minute. We can measure that in our laboratory. That's one of the things we do there. We measure energy costs. So we can measure calculating the amount of oxygen consumed during a given exercise, we can calculate directly how many calories are used. It's a fixed ratio. So when I did that, I found that I mollified that painful hamstring and was getting great workouts anyhow, and my resting heart rate, which was already down to about 55, fell to 35. So I have a 35 resting heart rate, which is unusual, probably the slowest in the world. Everybody my age wants to have heart block. If you have heart block, you have a slow heart rate too, but then the doctor better take care of you quick. That was one reason. From there, it fungated, like grew, because not only was I doing one movement, but I thought in the four limb format, there are literally dozens of things. You can make it like dance. Indeed, I wrote chapter of dance. And I consider myself a kind of a diamond in the rough kind of dancer. Never took any lessons doing that. And I had a wife who was a wonderful dancer who could never get me to dance. Now that I exercise, I love to dance. Very strange.
I should get my husband to exercise. He doesn't dance.
Well, George Sheehan, who was, the great running guru, didn't like music and didn't like dance. And I once theorized that many people get into exercise modalities that are stereotyped and highly repetitive are really people who don't like to dance, because that's what dance isn't. Dance is moving from one format to another. And that's what I do with my exercise, although I wouldn't pretend to get men to do it, because they see it as non-macho. But I'm doing a video soon on the use of heavy weights with music, and I think that'll appeal to men, and we won't call it dance. We'll keep that secret.
And you say that you're writing other. Well, you're writing
several
manuscripts
right now.
All right, I have six, seven, eight.
I don't know. Some of them may be merged into one book. So I'm not sure how many books are going to come out of it, but there are at least six or seven.
And these are.
They're on exercise, now veering away from the physiology of exercise, because I think I know as much about that as I really need to know for now. You can never know enough, but they're writing thousands and thousands of papers at every human energy lab and every university across the country. So they don't need the likes of me doing physiologic research. But I am writing more articles about the philosophy of exercise, about the motivation, the psychology, going back to my roots as a shrink, vis-a-vis physiology. It's very interesting that loop is there, has taken place. But it's appropriate because the chief problem in terms of this wellness factor that we call exercise, it's the best of all of them, the chief inhibiting factor is that is the psychological. We're inhibited for all kinds of reasons, and they're all very interesting. We haven't time to psychoanalyze everybody, so we got to say what Reebok says. Life is short, get with it, or what Nike says. Just do it. And these staccato-like remarks are, I think, a result of the ad agency's frustration at the whole problem of mobilizing a relatively slothful population. So that's my major mission right now, from now till I stop writing anything, is what can we do to get people to take care of themselves? And not only in exercise, but I'm obviously interested in other elements of holistic, if you want to, medicine. And so I'm interested in nutrition, though I'm hardly as expert in nutrition as I am in fundamentals of exercise, and in substance abuse, and in stress management, which I was, in fact, a professional for 30 years, I was a stress manager.
Was that the major part of your practice?
No, but in looking back, I can say that what a psychiatrist does, essentially, no matter what his particular school or his persuasion, is helping the patient manage the various stresses of the modern life. You know, we could call it psychoanalysis, we could call it Jungian analysis or whatever, but essentially we're all after this, the same thing, and that is a better adjustment between the patient and his environment. That includes, you know, everything from family life to God knows what, you know, hobby, choice of hobby. So I guess what you could say is, from something that started on a very specific note, and the other thing was working at the Home for the Aged. Working for the Home for the Aged really, I think, settled the issue as to whether I was going to be interested in physiological processes of exercise.
Are you working there now?
Am I? No. No, I worked there for a dozen years before I wrote my book. And from the very first, I began to see, these people are in wheelchairs mostly because they haven't taken care of themselves. They haven't preserved the musculature, essentially. That the musculature atrophies at a fantastic rate if you don't take care of it. So that the use it or lose it philosophy is particularly applicable to the muscular system and to the cardiovascular system. Actually, the heart's not nearly as important as the muscles as far as I'm concerned, and many physiologists disagree. I'm a so-called peripheralist. There's two.
You can't have much of a heart unless you need the cardiovascular.
It's really true. You know, if you see people who are in wheelchairs, they have coronaries at a much higher rate than people who are not in wheelchairs. I mean, young people. And it's because without stimulation from the periphery, from the skeletal muscle, the heart really doesn't get arrived. That elemental fact is really neatly sidestepped by most people in this field. And so we still have people worrying about heart rates during exercise. Are you into your target heart rate? While that's okay, it doesn't cause any problems. The focus should really be on the locomotor apparatus, knowing that if you do that well, the heart will get its share. Can't help it.
And your laboratory is also an extension.
An extension in what sense?
Of the exercises and the physiology.
Yeah, I've had laboratories in my house up in the attic. When I started out, because I would buy any kind of piece of apparatus I could get that would give me an approximation of how much oxygen was being used per minute. But then when I started this thing at Pitt and got a young man to really be a professional full-time researcher for me, we bought the best equipment that money could buy. And the university continues to use that equipment for young men who are seeking graduate degrees. So I think that's another nice service to do.
You've not found anybody, I forget his name, I don't know who he was.
Tom Om.
You've not found a replacement for him.
Well, I'm not in a hurry. I can find somebody in like 10 minutes. And Tom has voiced his willingness to moonlight for me and do little. See, it's a wonderful way to write a book. Wonderful way to study exercise. I can invent a movement one day. Within 15 minutes, I could have a test done that shows what the energy cost of that particular movement is, whether it's done by a little girl or a 6'5" football player. And so it's that easy access to, and I could just say to Tom, Tom, see if you can get this guy to do 12 Mets doing this particular move, and tell me how long it lasts. Or get him to do something I know he can last forever with, and see how many Mets it knocks out. Mets are units of energy. That's all. Simple. And then, you know, it's been a fun. What I do is make it my whole universe. So most of the people, and that's what's frustrating to me, most people in the fitness business, even in academia, are centered in on some focus of exercise or some particular thing they want to study, lactate levels in dogs, you know, running on a treadmill. But my interest is much more global. I go to the particular because I have no choice sometimes but to do so. But my interest is much more philosophical about it. And it gets me into all kinds of interesting nooks and crannies, like the study of music as it relates to body movement. The study of intelligence as it relates to movement. I've always been a specialist in that form. In psychiatry, I was always considered myself more interested in cognitive psychology than anything else. That is, the anatomy of thinking, how thinking works. And exercise fits into that nicely because we can do things like get people to work at a certain workload and see how they respond to stimuli at different workloads. Becomes very important because one of the ways of getting people to exercise is to get them to do it in front of a television set where they can receive information, even if it's an entertaining variety. We could find out for each individual how high their exercise load can be and still process data. It's a very interesting kind of subject. Nobody's done anything like that at all.
That's why we're here.
Okay, well, if that's why you're here, it's a good reason.
In retrospect, is there anything that you would change or do differently in your career or your personal life?
I think that all considered, if I had to do it over again, I might not have gone into psychiatry. I mean, I had a lot of fun in psychiatry, and I think psychiatry ultimately was responsible for me getting into this field too. But there were other things that I loved all the specialties essentially, and I'm still not sure why I chose it, except that some of my best friends from my class were going to go into psychiatry, and I went too, although they would have said I was the leader. They would have said they followed me there, so I don't know how it really worked, but I think I might have gone into internal medicine, for example. I know fields I would not have gone into. I would have not gone into surgery. I would not have gone into oncology. But sports medicine, for example, was not a specialty then. I might have really been interested in that. And there are some wonderful physicians in this country who are specialists in that area.
Would you feel
more? The most compelling of all of them is a guy named John Hollison, Hollosczy, who is at the University of Washington, St. Louis, head of the Department of Exercise Physiology, a real brilliant, real wonderful guy. Has made all kinds of contributions that are fundamental in their scope. But there will be an increasing number of physicians devoted to wellness themes as time goes on because, you know, $1 trillion of medical bills are not going to work in this country. We're essentially going to break it. And we've got to get people to take care of themselves. They're going to stop entitlements to, you know, huge degree anyhow. They're going to have to. And what do we put in their place? Well, we have to make people more autonomous, essentially. And I think that getting people to electively labor is one of the hardest, you know, things, philosophically speaking, to get them to do. You know, it's almost as though people resent your telling them that they have to work that hard in order to achieve a higher echelon of function. I'm writing a chapter right now on exercise and play. And I'm trying to make the point that that with high levels of work capability, play can be